It's countdown time. It is Tuesday before Turkey Day. Everyone's waiting for it, but we have some news to talk about. Mazda's diving into the EV pool. GM servicing Tesla, and Mr. Beast going to college.
Everywhere I go,
got it. The people really want to know
who I is. He's like, all these middle schoolers been watching me for 7 years. I'm
going to
take care of
seven, man. He's about to flip. I can't wait to talk about that, sir, because there are a few little details that I read up about on the side that's not in there.
Paul, did you know that yesterday, when the president, which it happens every year now for like 50 years or something,
when he
pardoned the turkeys? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Pardoned the turkeys.
Yep.
The names of the turkeys, catch this, Chocolate and Chip.
You got to be kidding me.
Chocolate and Chip turkeys please. Got pardoned yesterday.
Who for named
being
those?
Listen, big.
Whoever named those.
That's a thing.
I know it wasn't the president. I know it was somebody on his staff. And I'm sorry to be a pessimist, but that's terrible.
That's just messed up.
I feel like they gave it to a 4-year-old. What do you want to name this turkey? You know how like you get kids to name stuff? They're like, Chocolate. Do you want to name the turkey Chocolate?
Yep.
Right? That's how I feel. Yep. Maybe it was.
So you want to eat the pardoned turkey because it's chocolate? Okay. It got all weird. It got sideways.
Well, but they do eat turkey.
That's my turkey day.
They do eat turkey at the White House, though, or like for Thanksgiving dinner. Right?
Oh, yeah.
What turkeys are those?
It's like a whole weird thing.
What turkeys are those?
We forgive you for being fat.
Dude, that's
but we're gonna
eat you soon. That's just like a quintessential picture of politics in general across the board. Let's pretend we're gonna pardon the turkeys, but really we're killing the turkeys and we're eating them in a couple of days. Oh man, we could go all day on
brutal.
It's so brutal. Oh, I'm excited because we have some new In the Dirt podcasts to release. In the Dirt is one of our podcasts where when we're on the ground and we're just talking to people, grabbing them, pulling them aside out of conferences or out of their store. And we're like, can you talk to us for like 5 to 10 minutes? And they reluctantly sometimes say yes. And then we get them.
Oh, it's the best though.
So we got, what did we drop? Kevin Fry, Brian Pash, Jason Monahan.
Always good.
All now available. So go to your podcast platform, search In the Dirt with a Soto, and it's going to pop up. It's got a really... really sick album art.
Here's the thing. At 1.5 times, these are like 6 or 7 minute episodes.
Awesome.
It is not a ton of time, but you get some insights into the way that people are thinking, acting, moving, doing business, and I wouldn't miss them.
No.
They're just really good.
They're actually
I don't listen to many of our podcasts because I know. I don't even listen to many of our podcasts because
you make them.
I'm a part of all of them, right? But I actually go back and listen to these because I'm like, there's something interesting back
I do
in
too.
There. So
because of the speed of them and like when we record like 10 at a time, I realize how much I miss during the interview because I'm in the moment doing the interview. Check them out. I think if you listen to one or two, you'll be like, these are really good. And then you can go back and download all the other ones because realize the other ones are that good too. All right, we got some news to talk about. So here we go. I love this story. Better late than never. Mazda is the latest OEM to lean all the way into an EV future as they commit $11 billion. That's a lot of money. Yeah, we'll say that again. $11 billion through the year. Oh, he's going to hit them all.
All the trigger
pads. All the trigger pads you got. I wish we had one for this. $11 billion through the year. 2030 to a number of partnerships to develop hybrid and BEV products, including potential North American manufacturing. Like, oh, and by the way, we might build things in North America.
Wonder why they would do that. I don't know. Tax credits
could
and
have a little something to do with that. CEO Akira Marumoto. Let me just say Marumoto. The word moto is in his name. I mean, that's just a fit. Right. He said the company's partnering on motors, partnering on chips, batteries, and more to speed up innovation and development. So they're going partnership route to get going. Eventually, they'll make things on their own. They expect 25 to 40% of their sales to be comprised of EVs by the year 2030. Absolutely.
Well, here's Toyota and Mazda have actually partnered on engine technology. Right. So, Toyota basically wants the engine technology that Mazda has capacity for on the gasoline powered side. And Mazda is definitely interested in the hybrid electric vehicle capacity that Toyota has. And you see they're mirroring the like electric hybrid quote-unquote race of each other.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a really measured approach. You know, it's interesting because Mazda was actually one of the earliest hybrid vehicles to ever come, actually battery electric vehicles ever to come out in the early 90s. Back in California, they sunset the program and then they brought it back. They sunset it and now they've brought it back now. I will say I've been really, really underwhelmed as like a Mazda aficionado.
Yeah, and if you don't know, Kyle had been with the brand for quite a while, so he knows what's up with Mazda.
They spent so much time trying to get diesel into the U.S., so much time trying to get this Skyactiv X engine, which they still haven't brought to the U.S., and now they have a BEV, yet it's only available in California, and it has like an 80-mile range. So they...
Is that true? You know, they have one that's
only available in California.
Is it a scooter?
And... I mean, low range. Yeah, it's like a small crossover. But also it's interesting because when you look at this, and now prior to all of this EV push and the new political actions on like where it needs to go, Mazda didn't have as much worry on the EV side because they don't have trucks. Their EPA averages are higher than any other manufacturer because they only have crossovers and cars. And so they were just way ahead. Their engine technology had a higher mile per gallon than anybody else. And so they kind of got behind on the EV race because they were so far ahead in the average EPA guidelines that were out that other manufacturers had to like work against with hybrids and EVs because of their trucks. So it's kind of this interesting place that they're in. But if I know anything about Mazda and Toyota and technology, guessing they there's probably going to be a little bit of leapfrog in that like late 2020s.
Well, so similar to Toyota. Similar to Toyota, they're taking a very measured approach to what they think the EV market will actually be, saying like they expect 60% of the market to still be combustion engines. And they say we have to respond flexibly. 60% still might be pretty generous. I mean, it still might be pretty generous. I like the one thing that they're doing too is they're moving forward. Their profit actually jumped from like 4% to 7.5% in the last quarter. And they're saying we're going to do all this and maintain a 5% margin on everything, even with the big investments and the big development. So it's good to see. I mean, Mazda's kind of like a classy mid-market product in my mind.
Right.
They got like a class to them, like the way
they like to call themselves the alternative, the luxury. So, you know,
it's like the poor man's luxury.
That's just what they call
it. They don't want to call it the poor man's luxury. It's the alternative to luxury. For sure. I'm trying to think of a segue really hard for this next one.
Speaking of making a poor man. Segway.
That's really funny. You're going to have to listen to this to get to that, but it's a good one. General Motors President Mark Roose surprised some investors when he announced that a small number of GM dealers across the country have been providing maintenance to thousands of Teslas since 2000. Actually, I think it's 20. Is it 2001? I think I have the date wrong. I think it's 2021. Since 2021, he announced this at their recent investor day. So since 2021, he reported over 11,000 Teslas have been repaired by GM dealers, citing that they already have EV expertise from their experience with the Chevy Volt as one of the reasons they're familiar and qualified on the tech. He kind of chuckled when he said it's a new business and it's great. Customers seem to love it too, as they have a physical location to bring their Tesla to with an established system for scheduling and appointments and payments and probably pickup and delivery and a waiting room.
And they don't have to wait forever. And, there's a care for the customer because it's a local consumer and they want to get them into a new Chevy EV at some point. Uh-huh. And so there's a retention play there. All the things that dealers do.
Kind of want, right. According to Roose, Tesla is investing millions of dollars in to build service facilities near GM dealerships. And I don't know how substantiated that is, if they're doing it because of that. But as we know, GM dealerships are, I think, within like 9 or 10 miles on average of every American. So kind of locally placed. The article.
I think that GM dealers should put service centers close to Tesla shops. Just calling.
Well, they probably already have them. I'm pretty sure they already have it.
That's true. Yeah. They probably kind of already have them.
And the further you look into this, and we put these links in the show notes today, there's several examples of Tesla owners being quoted like exorbitant prices to repair things that some local independent EV shops have done. The example that we linked up, you know, somebody hit some debris in a Model 3. Tesla quoted them $16,000, said you have to replace this and replace the whole battery pack tray and all this stuff. And then they took it to a local EV specialized repair shop called Electrified in Florida, and they did it for $700. And there's a cool YouTube video that documents the whole thing. So there might just be something.
It's kind of like Apple and Right to Repair, I will say. Like, some people are willing to pay the $16,000 for Tesla to do it. You know,
and yeah, but with Apple, there's not that much of a price break. You know what I mean? Like, there used to be when you got like those cheap made screens and stuff, but now Apple made a big motion, right, to make the basic repairs just a lot more affordable. Remember that? Like, an Apple screen used to be like $400. Yeah,
they because of all the Right to Repair stuff.
That's right.
And they knew that they weren't going to be able to own the audience anymore.
Yeah. So, speaking of owning the audience.
What?
You couldn't have teed that up any better. The recently crowned most popular YouTuber in the world, Mr. Beast, a.k.a. Jimmy Donaldson, is growing up, and he's now teamed up with East Carolina University, an actual college, to offer a YouTube creator course that teaches the fundamentals of YouTube creation. And here's a hint. It just isn't running around with your phone and just shooting whatever you want to. There's a lot of strategy behind it. And the more you look, the more you see. It won't require full enrollment. You can just take this course. And basically, he's like just a few minutes down the road from this university. So he employs over 100 people currently to kind of keep the Mr. Beast ecosystem spinning. And he's looking forward to, you know, empowering people to do what he's done. But also, he's like, yo, when those kids, he's like, I usually spend 6 months training someone after I hire them. He's like, and the fact that I can like do this course with you,
boom,
and they can walk down the street
there,
plug them in.
Yep. Here you come. There you go. So smart. I think, you know what, Paul, we should start a course. Let's do a course. Northwood University. Northwood University, if you're paying attention, if anyone's listening, phone us. We'll do a content creators course.
But don't leave a voicemail.
All of that type of stuff. Right there.
But if you call, don't leave a voicemail, because we'll never hear it. You have to send a text message. No. Actually, I should just put on my voicemail. If you leave a voicemail, it's been nice to hear from you. I'll never hear it. Please send me a text message. Unfortunately, the spammers are figuring it out, and they're all sending me text messages now. But this really highlights this sophistication and growing up of like professional YouTube. I mean, Jimmy Donald, I think he's 23 now, but he's been doing this since he was 13. And if you listen to like his interview with Joe Rogan, it just painstakingly obsesses over the details of these YouTube videos. But he's tapped into something that is a viable living for people. And even in automotive, we just saw this, Kyle. Automotive is starving for content creators. I mean, everybody's kind of starving for content creators.
Like, you have to look at the time and dedication that Mr. Beast and his team puts in to things like templates, graphics,
thumbnails,
cover photos,
planned thumbnails,
hashtagging, planned shots, all of the things that go in to creating content that wins. It, like, we like to say all the time, like, all you need is an iPhone, all you need is a lot. And yes, it's a target rich environment. To get started. That's to get started, to like really become an expert, to really push in, to move your market, to gain market share via content creation. You have to be a student. Like, the people are taking college courses for this stuff now. It's that important to be a content creator that is richly studied in the platform of your choice. And so thinking about that as any business right now, like, if you want to win the organic game and the long tail game of a following of people that are attached to your brand, the only way is to have dedicated people that are students of their craft.
Yep.
And Mr. Beast is proving that theory with this type of course.
You know what else he proves? That there's not an immediate ROI, right? He's been doing this for 10 years. A funny story. His mom really wanted him to go to college. And so he enrolled in college and literally got zeros. He showed up and he would sit in his car and edit videos And he was like, by the time my mom finds out I have zeros, I have to be making enough money as a YouTuber to move out of the house. So he started making $1,000 a month, so he moved out. But his mom's pretty cool. They have a great relationship now, as you can imagine. So there you go. I hope that's a little dose for your Tuesday. Kyle, I feel better already. I feel like going to make something.
Oh, man. It all lifted me up. It was ready.
We're loose. Got to limber up because we got to eat some turkey in just a couple days.